Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. Remember the Brady Bunch? The kids in that early 70s TV family occasionally broke appliances, eyeglasses, and mom's favorite vase, but they rarely actually argued with each other or with their parents. By the middle of season one, they had accepted their roles in a blended family where the adults brought children from previous marriages into a new one. They accepted the authority of their non-biological new parents without question and took for granted that they were valued equally. In real life, my guest believes stepfamilies can be as happy and functional as any others, but would remind us that these families typically have some extra hurdles to leap, and getting over them takes patience and hard work. George S. Glass is a psychiatrist and author of the book Blending Families Successfully, helping parents and kids navigate the challenges so that everyone ends up happy. George, welcome to Think.
Thank you for having me.
You are a practicing psychiatrist, but you also have personal experience with life in a blended family. Will you share a little bit of your story with us?
Sure. I'm glad to, and that's part of why we wrote the book. You know, I'm a psychiatrist. I'm a Yale-trained psychiatrist. My wife is a master's in education and was a teacher. And when we got together over 30 years ago, she had a 13-year-old and a 9-year-old, and I had a 13-year-old. And we had been divorced for different periods of time, and we tried to figure out how to make it work. And so we looked around, and we talked to friends who had been divorced and remarried and said, hey, what did you do? And most people said, you know, we don't know what we did, or we were lucky. Other people said, well, you know, his son was unhappy about the divorce, so we don't see him anymore, which to us felt terrible. You know, it's like a death. And I went to look for books, and they were either very detailed psychiatric books, which were essentially over-complex and useless, or very religious-themed books such as, you know, God wants you to be together or to eat together, which I'm sure God does, but it's not very practical. So we essentially mucked along. And, you know, one of the things that happened that sort of triggered it off was that every Sunday night we'd go out for dinner. And we'd say to the kids, hey, where do you want to go? And two kids would want to go one place, and one kid would want to go to another place. You know, whether it's Chinese and Mexican or, you know, barbecue or hamburgers, it didn't matter. There were always two wanting to go one place. And we'd say, hey, you know, last week we went to your place. You know, let's try to go to his place. And it blew up. In the first family, in the first marriage, spouses fight about the in-laws. The second family, they fight about the kids. So very quickly it gets to be, you know, that kid is like his dad. He's self-centered and pushy. Or, you know, you coddle this kid, you know, you favor him and, you know, you treat him special. And we're not going to work if everybody doesn't get treated equally. So it would end up, we'd end up arguing. And of course, I can remember marking off the days, you know, hoping, you know, until the kids went off to college, thinking, oh, my God, when they're off to college, we'll be free of this. Well, then my wife and I had two children, boys, who were less than a year apart. So, you know, I'm a psychoanalyst. I mean, I've been psychoanalyzed. I'm a psychiatrist. And, you know, I know about what's supposed to happen in families. So we have these two children. They're our kids. They have the same parents. They have the same siblings. And every Sunday night, they'd start to argue. One of them wanted to go one place, one to go to another. Then we would start to argue. And all of a sudden, we realized the issue was not, nobody cared about whether it was Mexican, Chinese, barbecue. It was about being special. They want to feel like they're heard, that whatever they say, somebody's heard them. That was really the first point that pulled it together for us. The second thing was, you know, 25 years later, our older kids who are in their 30s have friends getting divorced. And their friends who are getting divorced are doing the same kind of stupid things that we and our friends did. I mean, a couple was getting together and the 12-year-old boy was mad about the marriage. So they didn't take him to the wedding. I mean, they had a wedding, you know, overseas, and they didn't take the child there. So of course, you know, it doesn't make any sense. It's nuts, And, you know, 5 years later, the marriage blows up because they weren't able to resolve it. And so I thought, well, you know, let's see what we learned. And I guess, you know, there are a lot of messages in the book. And the book is a combination of our experiences and my 40 years of practice as a psychiatrist. But the message is essentially, if people as well-trained and as well-educated as my wife and I are can make these kind of mistakes, anybody's going to make them. And it's not a question of making a mistake. It's a question or doing something you wish you hadn't done. I mean, you react out of anger or hurt and you do something. But it's taking a look back afterwards as parents to say, hey, what happened? What did we do that we wish we hadn't done? And what can we do differently the next time? Because for sure it'll come up again and again if you don't examine those circumstances. And so the book is really a look at how that process happens from when you first get divorced and you're sort of shocked at what happened to how do you start to get involved with somebody else to, you know, how do you involve the children to, you know, what happens when you, you know, who you take on, a, you know, what do you do about a honeymoon to what happens when you add new children to the mix. And that's what we really tried to look at. That's really what I tried to look at. And help people understand. You know, again, it's not a cookbook because you can't make a cookbook. Every situation is a little different. But what you can do is start to look at what happened, what did the kids tell you, and what can you learn so that when it happens again, you'll do it differently.
Well, one of the things that you had to balance from the beginning was the need for sort of us time with the whole family together and providing individual attention, you know, to suit the needs of each individual child.
That's an ongoing issue. And, you know, we have kids in their 40s, and it's still an issue when they come to visit. You know, what happens is I would say that there are still times that our kids, I mean, they're not kids. They're, you know, 40-year-olds. The youngest one is now 27. But the important thing is they all get along, and they don't think of themselves as stepkids. They think of themselves as siblings, and they call each other and rely on each other for help and advice and support. But, you know, what you try to do is, you know, you try to spend time with each child individually a little bit and then spend time with everybody together. And part of it is listening to what your child says. And part of it is, you know, making the time commitments you can make given your life. And I think part of that is the other message we learned, and it holds true, you know, 30 years later, is that the biological parent really is the one to discipline or critique their own children. The non-biological parent can't really punish or critique the other child without it raising all the you're not my dad, you're not my mom, who do you think you are, you know, to do that. So that you know, if you're unhappy with something that, you know, one of your stepchildren do, you need to tell your spouse, hey, you know, I wish he or she didn't do that, and let them deal with it rather than you, because it becomes a knee-jerk response to the stepchild as soon as the non-biological parent jumps in and tries to criticize them or correct them.
Well, for
unless
those,
they ask.
Yeah. For those children, what do you find are the most common sources of anxiety for children who are faced with the prospect of being part of a blended family all of a sudden?
It's hard to understand emotionally, but children who are adopted and children whose families are divorced or always feel at some level like it's their fault, that somehow they're defective, something's the matter with them, And it's because of them that they were given up for adoption or their parents divorced. No matter how much both parents say, we love you, it's not about you, you know, we don't get a, whatever, the child always feels like, if I were smarter, prettier, better athlete, ate my beans or something, it wouldn't have happened. So they're always left with that sense that there's something the matter with them, number one. Number two, no matter what you do to set up, two houses where each child has their own bedroom, et cetera, all in their own stuff, they always feel after a divorce as if there's no place that's theirs. There's nowhere that they really belong. And even though you tell them, you know, stepmom loves you or stepdad loves you or this is your bedroom or this is our old house and mommy's going to keep it and you're going to keep your bedroom, they never feel the same. And you have to reassure them. And that becomes a problem when you merge families or blend families, because you have two groups of people coming together who have different histories. Not just, you know, baggage is sort of a pejorative negative term, but they have different histories of how they were raised, what the values were, how they were disciplined. And all of a sudden you're trying to consolidate it. And it doesn't happen like in the Brady Bunch where the gavel goes down and everything's fine. It takes a long period of time.
So as you're transitioning with a family through that time when you're kind of forming a third culture, right, separate from either of the two that have come together, maybe combining parts of that, what do you do to ease the transition?
Well, you spend time with all of them. You try to do things together. You recreate new, you know, I use the term rituals, but social events that become family events. Like, you know, in our new family, we have a ritual of Baskin Robbins birthday cakes. Even if somebody's on a diet, we always have a birthday cake. You know, that's a ritual that wasn't with either family before. And the other thing is that things will blow up, or something will happen that you don't think about. I mean, you don't anticipate. And, you know, again, one of my favorite examples is our first Christmas together. Donna, my wife, and I, we had the three kids who were, you know, two 13-year-olds and a 9-year-old. And we, you know, have all the Christmas presents out, and they're all laid out, and we're sleeping. 6 o'clock in the morning, I wake up, and I hear kids screaming and running around opening presents. I grew up in a family where everybody would wait to open the presents. You spent all this time buying stuff. You don't open anything until everybody's there. You know, they have a camera that you do the oohs and ahs so you can hear the child say, "Oh, that's just what I wanted." Da, 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 da. So, you know, I'm like enraged that these kids all opened all this stuff and we're still sleeping in bed and didn't wait for us. And my wife says, "You know, shut up. Go back to sleep. Isn't it nice that they're busy and we can sleep late today?" And, you know, once I cooled down, I realized, you know, there's not a right or wrong way. It's just, they're just different. And you know, it's going to come up the next Christmas. So you have to decide, what do you want to do? You know, what's important enough to fight about and what isn't? So, you know, those kind of situations come up again and again, and you can never anticipate what they are because they're so different for each family and each family's history.
My guest is Dr. George S. Glass. He's a psychiatrist and author of the new book, Blending Families Successfully, helping parents and kids navigate the challenges so that everyone ends up happy. Join us at 1-800-933-5372. We'll be back in 2 minutes.
Funding for Think comes from SMU Graduate Liberal Studies programs. Accepting applications for January to design your own Master of Liberal Studies degree at SMU with concentrations in Global Studies, Creative Writing, and Organizational Dynamics. More at smu.edu/MLS.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. We're speaking this hour with psychiatrist Dr. George S. Glass, author of Blending Families Successfully, Helping Parents and Kids Navigate the Challenges So That Everyone Ends Up Happy. Join us at 1-800-933-5372 or email think at kera.org. George, how can parents who are dating decide when and how to introduce their children to their new partners and to their children if they happen to have them?
Well, you know, it should be a gradual process. I think before you involve your children with someone you're dating, you need to be sure that you're in a relationship that's going to last. Because if you involve someone in a relationship, you know, you involve your kids in a relationship, and then it breaks up, and then you go to another one, and it breaks up, you know, for the children, that's another abandonment. The other person, if you're involved with somebody who's a nice person, they'll want to know your children or they'll want to be involved or your kids will get involved with them. And then if for whatever reason it doesn't work, they're left again. And so the best thing is to make sure that you're sure. And that's not the second date or the third date. That's, you know, several months. I can tell you candidly, I didn't always do that. I mean, there are times you get involved with somebody, they're solicitous of your children, they want to help out. You're busy, you know, I'm busy, I'm working, somebody offers to help take care of my child or pick them up at school or something, it helps me. And the child likes them, and then all of a sudden the relationship ends. And you know, the person that you're involved with obviously is upset if you end it, but the child's really upset because they've grown attached to somebody, and you're hurting them again, and it makes it hard for them to understand. So the first caveat is make sure that it's somebody you really want to be involved with and spend some time with them so you know them. When we were dating, you know, my wife's first comment was, you know, you have to be sure you like me before we talk about having kids or anything else, because, you know, sooner or later the kids are going to leave. Now, 30 years later, I believe that's true. But, you know, when we're struggling with two 13-year-olds and a 9-year-old, and then we have two more kids, it's hard to imagine your kids will ever leave. But the truth is they do leave, and you have to like the person. That's the first thing. And you have to spend some time getting to know them. The next step is I think you have to involve the new person and or their children in a very slow-paced, casual way. We make the point in the book about, the first time to introduce somebody to your children or the family is not Thanksgiving dinner when all the relatives are there. You know, you do something casual. You go to the movies and then split up, or you go walk around the zoo for an hour, or, you know, a museum or something where it's very casual. If the kids don't want to be there or they misbehave, that's okay because everybody is out in a short period of time. And gradually you increase the activities and the amount of time. And I would say another piece of advice is that if you really can't stand somebody, somebody's kid or one of their kids, it's never going to work unless you're willing to change. Because realistically, someone's child is a part of them. And to the extent that you don't like the child and you act that way, you're telling there's something about you I don't like. And that sets the relationship up on a bad step, which continues over time. So it's a gradual process. And again, I'm always shocked and appalled when I hear stories about somebody starts to get involved with a person, and you know, it can be that the father abandoned the mother and the child when they were very little, and the child never met his or her father. And so the mother says, "Oh, this is your new daddy," and take him as that. And you know, that's ludicrous because, you know, number one, the child already has a biological father. He may not be a functioning father, but he's got a biological father. And at some point, people often want to find out who that was. What kind of person would have had me and left me? And become resentful of the parent who hid them, who hid that parent from them. So, you know, a mother may avoid the father. You know, she was hurt. She doesn't want anything to do with him. And you know, 30 years later, the adult child will say, you know, I finally got in touch with my dad. He told me he wrote letters to me for years. He sent me presents for years. I never heard about him. And I'm really mad at my mother for doing that. I mean, she could have just said, I was hurt, I was mad, but, you know, you ought to have time with him.
Let's go to the phones now at 1-800-933-5372. We have David on the line in Denton. Hi, David.
Hi, Chris. How are you?
Very well, thanks.
I'm a single father, and my daughter is about 9 years old now, about getting ready to turn nine. And about 5 years ago, her mom passed away while we were out of the country. And it's been, you know, it's been hard on us, and it's been, you know, it's always been difficult. But anytime I get in a relationship now, or try to get in a relationship, she's the first one that says, you know, you're trying to replace my mom. And it kind of leads into a whole argument between the two of us that never gets resolved. But she, at the same time, she tells me she wants me to be happy. And, you know, my child comes first, but it's, you know, what do I get for me is the other side of the equation. But my question is, how do you go about navigating when a parent is lost, not to divorce, not where they can still be present, but, you know, when someone passes away suddenly?
Thanks so much for your call, David.
Yeah, thank you, Dave. I think it's a great question. And you know, again, there's no clear-cut answer except that you're the parent and, you know, you want to listen to what your child says, but you have to have a life. So, you know, you have to find somebody that you're comfortable with who understands the circumstances and slowly over time, you know, work on the relationship. I mean, the reality is with divorced parents also, children don't want their parents to remarry. And interestingly, when there is a divorce, usually the kids, particularly the girls, are much more comfortable with their father dating. But they get very upset with the mother dating. The idea that, you know, a 9 or 12-year-old girl or a 15-year-old girl, she's the one who thinks she should be dating. Why is her mother out dating? And so, you know, you have, it's an issue of boundaries. You know, I love you, but, you know, daddy has to have a life. And, you know, we're not going out every Friday and Saturday night. You know, you're 9 years old, get some friends, and, you know, you go to their house. They can come to our house certain times. But I have to do something for me. And I think it's a, even in divorce situations where, you know, the children will tell the parent, why don't you leave him, you know, or why don't you leave her? You know, she's a drunk, she's abusive. How can you stay with somebody like that? When the actual divorce happens, the kids are often very upset about it, even though they've encouraged it, because in a way it changes things. And so, you know, for you to develop a relationship, and I think the best advice I could provide is, you want your daughter to grow up and have a nice relationship with a man when the time comes. And the only way that she'll learn what that is by watching you, if you can pick up and move on. So, you know, you have to be aware she's not going to be happy no matter what. You just want to, you know, slowly transition it and explain to her, you know, you have to have your life and you do your own thing and, you know, I'm going to do this, and certain nights are my nights. What do you want to do? Friday night, I've got something doing. What do you want to do? Do you want to stay home with a sitter? Do you want to go to a friend's house? Something like that.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go next on the phone to Tracy in Frisco. Hi, Tracy.
Hi, Chris. This is exciting. I'm a big fan of your show.
Thank you.
And I want to say quickly just a thank you to Dr. Glass, because this book has been so needed for a long time, because the first thing you do when you find out you're going into that blended family is you look for the book. You look for the book that's going to help you, and he's right. There's not been a lot that's been out there. And I just wanted to make an observation on something that he said earlier about that when you've got that the new blended family and you've got that biological child, that it can be difficult for the step-parent to discipline or provide correction, because you immediately have the biological child that says, well, you're not my mom, you can't tell me what to do, which I have heard those words probably 1,000 times if I've heard them once, and I have a great stepdaughter, but it took us a long time to get to that really strong relationship. And it was what was challenging was we were in a position where I was the parent at home. Maybe her dad wasn't there, but I'm now the parent at home in charge, and I've got to have the ability to keep her safe. I have got to have the ability to say, no, you know, you can't, don't touch that hot stove. No, you can't go out and play in this weather. I still needed that ability as the adult in the home who had that parenting obligation. I needed the ability to do that without necessarily interfering with her feelings about the situation. So we would say, no, I'm not your mom, but right now your mom and dad aren't here, and I'm the parent in the house. And so you're going to have to respect me when I tell you you're not going to go outside in this weather, or you can't do this without shoes on, or you know, those kinds of parenting things where they're looking for that adult, because otherwise it started to feel like I was behaving as a babysitter, and that didn't seem very helpful either. So I was just hoping that Dr. Glass might have an opinion on whether it's okay for you to find that sort of in-between space. Otherwise, it seems that the step-parent doesn't really get the opportunity to be a parent, and sometimes for safety reasons, it's necessary.
What do you think, George?
I think that you worked out a great resolution. You know, you didn't say, don't do this. You said, you know, I'm the person who's here now, like the babysitter. But, you know, you don't say that. But, you know, you can't do certain things because they're not safe. When your dad comes back, we'll talk about him. But until then, I don't want you to go out and play in the rain or ride your bike to a dangerous place or something like that. And, you know, ultimately, you know, you get more authority as your husband supports you in that. But it avoids the knee-jerk response. You know, you're just saying, hey, I happen to be here. I can't help it. I'm the only one who's here. So this is what we have to do. And when he comes home, we'll talk about it. Take it from there. But it sounds like you worked out a great resolution.
How much input should children be given with regard to, say, new rules and expectations that come from living in this new family arrangement?
You know, I think what I said earlier about being special. Everybody wants to be heard. So, you know, listening to what your kids want doesn't hurt. But it doesn't mean you have to go along with it. You know, you want to say, you know, if you've had one kid tell you this, you've heard it a gazillion times, which is, why can't I stay out till such and such a time? Why can't I get a motorbike? Why can't I do such and such? Johnny has one, or his parents let him do that, or his parents are nicer. So there's always that pressure that you ought to go along. And the answer is you can't always go along. What you do is, you know, say, hey, you know, what's the issue? And let's talk about it. And then you talk about it together as a family. I mean, you know, one set of parents, you know, if you have, you know, traditionally, if you have one child, you tend to be much more strict and uptight on the first child. You know, the old story, the first kid, you know, you have every time they burp or you change the diaper, you have a picture. By the time you have the fourth or fifth kid, yeah, you know, you have a picture on their birth when they're born, and you have a picture at their high school graduation. And that's true for the discipline. So if you have, you know, if you tend to be a strict person and the other person tends to be, you know, much more laid back or hang loose, you just have to talk about it, because otherwise you get caught in the situation where either the kids play each parent off, even the step-parents. I mean, that happens in, you know, non-blended, in intact families. But you have to come to some kind of agreement, because in a blended family, there's a higher rate of divorce than there is in intact families. So the kids are good at doing that originally. And part of what happens is that as much as everybody says, gee, we want you to get married, we want you to be happy, as somebody said earlier, the truth is they're angry that the family broke up, their original family broke up. And they really want the parents back together, no matter how bad one parent or another was. And when the divorce is final and the new parents and one of the parents remarry, the gavel goes down, and that's the end of their old family for the children. And they realize that. I mean, I remember being at our when we got married, the 9-year-old who liked me, we spent time together, we liked my son, was sitting in the back in the middle of the wedding ceremony crying. And we were so excited we didn't really notice it. But, it was the end of his family, as he knew it up to then. So you have to appreciate that and understand that for a while, they may want to push you apart. If they can get, you and your new spouse to fight, their fantasy is you'll fight, you'll split up, and you'll get remarried to the original parent, no matter how bad they may have been.
We're speaking this hour with psychiatrist Dr. George S. Glass. His new book is called Blending Families Successfully, Helping Parents and Kids Navigate the Challenges So That Everyone Ends Up Happy. We'll come back to more of your calls and emails after this break. You can join the conversation at 1-800-933-5372. You can email think@kera.org or send me a tweet at Chris Boyd Think.
Funding for Think comes from SMU Graduate Liberal Studies programs. Accepting applications for January to design your own Master of Liberal Studies degree at SMU with concentrations in Global Studies, Creative Writing, and Organizational Dynamics. More at smu.edu/MLS.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. We're speaking this hour with Dr. George S. Glass, a psychiatrist and author of the book Blending Families Successfully, Helping Parents and Kids Navigate the Challenges So That Everyone Ends Up Happy. Join us at 1-800-933-5372, and that's where we find Lisa in Dallas. Hi, Lisa.
Hi.
Hi, go right ahead, please.
I just wanted to make a couple of comments. The first one was that I didn't really like my husband when I got married to him, but my son just loved him. And so I thought, okay, well, later on we'll just get divorced if we could just raise this child, and we're still together after 24 years. So sometimes things actually do work out if your kid likes them. The other comment was, I don't think a step-parent should ever discipline a child because the child will blame the step-parent. What I usually ended up doing was being the heavy. He would say, I'm going to tell your mother, and sometimes, most of the time that did work. So thanks. I'll take any comments off the air.
Thanks for your call.
Thank you.
Do you want to comment on any of that?
Yeah, I think you're right. It's great that your son liked your, it sounds like it's a stepdad, and, that you made it work. And interestingly, again, one of the points that we try to make, I try to make in the book is that, if you can avoid getting divorced, do it. An interesting study that came out of California in the 70s, when divorce first was made easy, if you will, was that they looked at a couple of different groups. This is a woman by the name of Wasserstein. And what she did was do in-depth interviews over 25 years over families. And she had a couple of hundred families that got divorced, and she looked at the kids and interviewed the parents over time. You know, it wasn't just the what percent have dogs, what percent have college educations, but looked at the whole situation. And she looked at 200 families or thereabouts who had who thought they had horrible marriages, but they couldn't leave for some reason, religion or children or something. And what they found was, you know, 5 or 6 years later, the people who stayed said they, you know, a majority of them said they had very good marriages. These are people who 5 years before said they wanted out, but they couldn't. And the takeaway from that, among other things, is that if you feel like you don't have a choice, you make an effort to make it work. And you know, if you make an effort to make it work, oftentimes it works out better than you thought it would. So I think that's absolutely true. And I think what you said about disciplining the child, if you're a step parent, is also true. And it's true years later. You know, and I'm sure you know this 24 years later that sometimes you can say something, and it will sense it. You know, it brings up for the child, who's now an adult, I'm sure, hurts that he had from, you know, when you all got married, the whole you know, blending, and you know, while they're functional, those scars are still there part of the time, or they're awakened or easily scratched, and so you have to be very careful. I think that's part of why a book like this is good around the holidays, because during the holidays, everybody gets together, and you have, you know, adult stepkids and grandkids, and everybody gets together, you know, and an offhanded comment can trigger off hurt again, or a reminder of, you know, when they were young and didn't feel like anybody wanted them. So, you know, again, it's I thought your point was very well taken. It's just be careful about disciplining your stepchild.
It sounds like from a lot of what you said that the healthiest, best working blended family is still going to function a little bit differently than a biological family where parents stay together and have children together. Is the problem that a lot of people go into a second marriage with kids, assuming that it will work the way they hoped their traditional original marriage would have worked?
Well, you know, I think that the big step in a marriage when it doesn't work is people have to walk away with a realization that what is it about me that made it not work? It could be that I picked the wrong person, for sure, but what could I have done differently, or what did I do to contribute to it not working? So that if you take some kind of ownership in you know, what you did differently, then in your next marriage, you may behave differently. You know, a lot of people act as if I went to the car store and I bought a lemon the first time, so I'm just going to trade it back in and get a better model, or one that isn't a lemon, one that doesn't have defects. And the truth is that after somebody is 6 months old, everybody has baggage, and everybody has problems. And it's not that they don't have problems or you don't have problems. It's how do you deal with them or resolve them? And it's an ongoing process, and it's a process over time. The idea, you know, like you said in the beginning about the Brady Bunch, it doesn't take a year for it to happen. It takes years. And you get little glimmers once in a while that things are working. And I've got a couple of, you know, again, one of my favorite stories. One of the things I like is I collect T-shirts. I go somewhere, I get a T-shirt because I always, you know, I use them to work out. So this is, you know, more than 15 years ago. I'm looking through my closet one day, and I can't find some of my favorite T-shirts. I don't know where they are. So I, you know, I said to my wife, hey, where are my T-shirts? She doesn't know. Thanksgiving, my stepson comes back from his, you know, he's really my son now, but, you know, at the time, he comes back from his first semester in college, and he brings his dirty laundry, of course, for his mother to do. So I happen to look in the laundry room, and fortunately he's out with friends. I see all my old T-shirts, and I'm furious about, you know, geez, you know, he's got a father. Why didn't he take his own dad's T-shirts? Or at least why didn't he ask me? So, you know, I'm enraged about it. And my wife says, you know, hey, you know, if he didn't admire you and respect you, he wouldn't want your shirts. But it's because he loves you and he likes you and he, you know, wants to be like you that he has them. Well, I didn't look at it that way, but it's true. By the time he came home, I cooled off. It didn't matter. But, you know, again, it's a different scenario than with your own children. But it takes time, and those things come up again and again. I mean, the idea that you're going to get together and you're going to start to call somebody daddy or mommy in the next couple of weeks or a month is ludicrous. There are little glimmers of things get better, and you have to look for the positive changes. You know, all of a sudden, a kid'll ask you something that you know something about. You know, hey, can you help me with this, or what do you, you know, can you, which is much more positive than you jumping in saying, you know, you're not doing very well in math. Let me show you how to do math because I'm a math guy. You know, which says, number one, you're dumb. Number two, you don't know anything. And number three, I'm really smart and I'm going to fix it for you. Which they don't, you know, none of us wants to hear that from anybody. On the other hand, if he says, hey, you know, can you help me with this stuff because you know something about it, that's a whole different approach. And I think if you can do that over time, the opportunities to do that increase rather than decrease. I mean, it's again, you know, with your friends, we all ignore stuff with friends that we don't like because we like the friend. You know, with your kids, they're not perfect. Your own biological kids aren't perfect, and we aren't either. So, you know, you have to look for the positive things as much as you can.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. Sam's on the line now in Fort Worth. Hi, Sam.
Hi. How are you guys doing?
Well, thanks.
Great. So my question, just a little bit of background. So I'm the boyfriend to a mother with an 8-year-old daughter. And the situation that I'm calling in to ask a perspective on is that the ex-husband is pretty active in her life, which is great, but at the same time doesn't make the best decisions when it comes to a subject that you talked about earlier, including introducing her regularly to a new girlfriend basically every other week. And so much so that this last weekend specifically, we had a big issue because he essentially skipped out on an event for her, and he got caught in the lie and was actually babysitting for one of those other girlfriends. And my girlfriend's daughter was really affected by this, and so much so that we had this kind of breakdown, and I talked to her about it, and she said, you know, I really feel like I'm at risk of losing trust in my dad, and that's an emergency to her.
Hmm.
You know, we calmed it down, but essentially my question is, today I actually just had lunch with her a few minutes ago, and she's basically kind of pull the wool over her own eyes and say, oh, he was actually probably really sick. And essentially you can kind of see her willing, letting this go for herself and kind of making an excuse for him. And I'm wondering, I know it's not my role to make her confront this issue, but I was wondering what your recommendation would be in terms of, as she continues to do this, to have a healthy relationship with her dad.
Well, thank you so much for your call, Sam. It sounds like a tough spot emotionally to be in. So let's see if we can get some answers for you.
I think it's a great question, because the question is, after you split up, the children still have a parent that they love and they want to be involved with. And their ex-spouse, the one you're involved with, may be hurt or angry or unhappy with them, or fight, because if they could get along, they'd still be together and you wouldn't be there realistically. So, but the best thing you can do is to stay out of it. You know, the best thing, if the father feels like your friend and you're helping his daughter, it makes all the conflicts much better. Let your girlfriend talk to him about it, negotiate about it, you know, tell him how it hurt the girl's feelings. But you need to stay out of it, because, you know, 30 years from now, you may or may not be in the picture, but for sure her father will be. And if he's alive, and she'll be involved with him at some level. So all you can do is be supportive and say, you know, I know you love him. You know, tell him you're hurt or sorry. I mean, she wants to believe that he's okay, which is why she made up the story. And it's not your place to point out that it's not true. Your role is just to, you know, encourage them to be involved and you know, support your girlfriend in dealing with him. Say, hey, you know, you probably ought to tell her that, you know, Dad is not always reliable at this point in time, and that everything you get from him is wonderful, but sometimes you can't count on him because he has so much other stuff going on. And leave it at that, and you stay out of it, because it just makes it makes it worse for the child, and it puts your girlfriend in the middle, in a place that she's already been in, and makes it just worse for her.
If you could travel back in time to just after you had married your wife and become part of this blended family, and you could just give yourself one piece of advice or encouragement, what would that be?
I think the important, the piece of advice that I've had a hard time with, and my kids still react to at times, is being inclusive. You know, my situation, I mean, you know, the situation was different. My wife had two kids who were living with her full time. Her ex-husband would come and get the kids some of the time. Other times he wouldn't come. And, you know, she was happy to have them, and they're great kids. So I was happy to have them. But I miss my child, who was living in California, not being there. So when he would come, I would feel like I needed to make sure he had a special time. You know, it was like sort of Disney World for him. And, you know, I would at times exclude or try to exclude the other two kids, my wife's kids. And they would get upset, of course. And ultimately, my son said, hey, why are you doing that? I mean, there are a couple of stories in the book where, you know, my son and I would do traditional things like, you know, we'd go out duck hunting. And I, you know, I said, well, you know, this child's too little. I don't want to take him. Or we'd go out Thanksgiving Day and play football at Rice Stadium with a bunch of people. And I said, hey, he's too little. Well, he went, and he caught a touchdown, the stepson. He was ecstatic. My son was ecstatic. And my own son said, hey, Dad, why don't you include him? What's the point? So it was really me and not the kids. And I think that's the point, was the sooner you can be inclusive and try to treat everybody the same, the better off you are. And I have to say, in all honesty, my wife was much better at that and at teaching me that than I was. And that's the thing. If I had it to do over again, I wish I would have learned sooner.
The new book by psychiatrist Dr. George S. Glass is called Blending Families Successfully, Helping Parents and Kids Navigate the Challenges So That Everyone Ends Up Happy. George, thank you so much for spending this time with us.
Thank you very much for having me, Chris. And the booksellers are at Amazon. I appreciate your calling in and having me on your show.
Thank you. Think is produced by Stephen Becker and engineered today by Eric Bright. Lindsay Connect is assistant producer. Jeff Whittington is executive producer. Once again, I'm Chris Boyd. Thanks for listening and have a great day.